You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
From the depths of Atlantis we came, moving loudly through 100 episodes. Everyone knew we were among you, but not like this. It's Transmissions from Atlantis, featuring Brazen Witch Productions' own JC and Rita Della Torre. And now, your hosts.
I'm JC.
And I'm Rita.
And welcome to episode 106 of Transmissions from Atlantis.
Happy New Year!
And this is our first broadcast of the new 2016 year. And while we've been away, some crazy crap has been happening. Yep, the X-Files are back. And of course, we're going to review Mulder and Scully's return. We're very excited about that. We're also going to be talking about Doctor Who. We promised you a review of Series 9. But in addition to that, some major Doctor Who news came about, and that is Stephen Moffat will be leaving after Series 10, and maybe even Peter Capaldi.
Yep, well, we'll talk about that later.
Yep, but coming up first is X-Files.
The truth is out there.
So we're here to talk about X-Files, and you may not know that Reed and I are huge X-Files fans because we haven't really talked a lot about the X-Files.
Well, because the X-Files hasn't been around for a really, really long time.
Yeah, let's face it. I don't think we've heard hide nor hair of the X-Files since the 2008 movie I Want to Believe, which I want to forget.
And I hadn't watched it at all.
Yeah.
Because I've heard that I shouldn't, so yes. I didn't.
Until now.
Yeah.
See, what Reed and I decided to do, as we always do with these type of things, is since the X-Files was making its big return, we decided that we would go through all of the seasons of the X-Files and the movies and whatnot. Of course, we're not going to get through 9 years of 24 episodes.
Exactly. So we did the Myth Arc episodes.
The Myth Arc episodes. If you don't know what that is the conspiracy storyline with, you know, the cigarette smoking man and Krychek and all the
Deep Throat and all the alien stuff.
Yeah, all the alien stuff. So that's what we focused on. We got rid of the Monster of the Week episodes, even though we do love those Monster of the Week episodes. They're great episodes, but we knew that if we were going to get back into X-Files, we really needed to get into the X-Files mythology.
And let me tell you something. If you remove the Monster of the Week episodes and just watch the Myth Arc episodes,
mm-hmm.
It actually makes a lot more sense because there's usually so many episodes in between those Myth Arc episodes that you lose some of what you watch because mm-hmm. by the time you get more Myth Arc episodes, you've forgotten part of what you saw before.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's hard to keep track of those conspiracies.
That's a great point because a lot of times the Myth Arc episodes, they only have 2 or 3 or maybe 5 or 6 in a season. And like you said, after a while, with all these other X-Files episodes that have nothing to do with the mythology, everything kind of gets clouded. So you're right. It definitely helped keep track, although at the end it was a little bit confusing because they started conflicting with each other. And, you know, especially the Super Soldier storyline that made absolutely no sense. But at that point, I think X-Files was kind of grasping for straws, and it was dwindling down the drain.
If you think about it, it was grasping for straws ever since the initial conspiracy kind of bit the bullet.
Yeah.
And then they were trying to come up with these other stuff, and it just wasn't as compelling as the original conspiracy.
Yeah, they should have never done away with the Syndicate. Once they did away with the Syndicate, they got rid of their big bad.
Yeah.
And kind of, I don't know, it didn't have the same oomph after that.
Yeah, and if you think about it, with the new conspiracy, there really was never a defined big bad.
Yeah. And so, X-Files went for 9 years. It also had a movie in between season 5 and season 6, which was X-Files, Fight the Future, and that was actually really good.
Oh, I love that movie. That movie is fantastic.
So, after the 9th season, and David Duchovny, I believe, left after the 8th season, and he came back for the last episode, and they also had the movie in 2008, I Want to Believe, which was not a myth arc movie. It basically had nothing to do with aliens or anything like that. It was Billy Connolly being a pedophile priest that was psychic that could... That was psychically being able to figure out murders or whatnot, although he wasn't.
In fact, he was really the only supernatural element of the movie in general.
Yeah. You literally could have had any FBI agent there instead of Mulder and Scully, and it would have been the same movie.
Exactly. I think the only reason you even made us watch that movie is because I hadn't seen it.
Yes. And basically at the end, you know, you see Mulder and Scully floating off into somewhere. Yeah.
I think the whole point of watching that movie, if you're watching the Myth Arc episodes, is because you're going to see what happens to Mulder and Scully after the end of the series. And that's really all it was for. And here's another thing. Like you mentioned, Mulder leaves during season 8.
Right.
But because we watched only the Myth Arc episodes, we don't really get the sense of his absence because he's in all the Myth Arc episodes.
Pretty much, yeah. For season 9, yep.
There was like maybe one or two where he was mentioned, but he wasn't really truly in it. But he's in most of them, and you just don't feel that absence.
Yep. So, for the last 8 years, there's been nothing going on with the X-Files. Absolutely nothing. There haven't been any webisodes. I guess you could count comics. I mean, they had like comic series, but other than that, not much going on.
But the comic isn't really considered canon,
is it? It's not canon, no, it's not. So
if it ain't canon, it don't count.
Exactly. So, now Fox came up with the idea that they wanted to reboot the X-Files. And I was excited, especially when I found out that David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson were coming back to reprise their roles. I got even more excited when I found out that Mitch Pileggi is coming back as Walter Skinner. And then I lost my mind when I found out that William B. Davis was coming back as the Smoking Man, who supposedly died...
by being blown up...
at the end of Series 9!
Missile to the face, you usually can't survive that.
Right, and when the fire is filleting the skin off your face, and all that's left is a skull, usually you're dead! Usually. Okay, obviously you see where I'm going with this. Now, let me just say, I was tremendously excited to have the X-Files back, and watching Mulder and Scully together again, it brought a whole bunch of nostalgia, brought me back to the 90s. I mean, hell, you and I used to watch X-Files together when we first got married, so...
Yeah,
I mean,
we did.
It was always a automatic watch for us, and
in fact, at the time you and I were together, I think we were getting into those last few couple seasons, right?
Yep. So I was in to watch this reboot, no matter what, as bad or as good it was going to be, I was going to watch it,
and I was just as excited as you were.
Yep. And the first episode came. It was called My Struggle. And I, at first blush, I loved it. You know, because X-Files is back. We got the alien mystery. Everything's back. And then I started to think about the episode. And then I started hating myself because there's a lot about this episode that bothered me.
I wonder what that could be.
Well,
because I think a lot of the things that bothered you bothered me too. And I was the same way. I was really excited. I loved the episode at first glance.
Yep.
And then I'm like,
You started to think about it, right?
Then when you really start to think about it, you're like, wow, okay, deja vu.
So, here's the first thing that bothered me. The first thing that bothered me was how quickly Mulder just kind of abandoned the last 15 years of the X-Files because some Fox News talking head, Tad O'Malley, and some bimbo who claims that she's an alien abductee spin this whole yarn that everything that Mulder has seen is bullcrap and that it's always been the government, the big bad government, that's manufactured everything, and that the whole alien conspiracy was a bunch of bullcrap, that and they've been, you know, faking out Mulder for 14 years.
Michael Christoph.
Exactly! Right? Have we not heard this story before? And another thing! Since when did it become trust everyone instead of trust no one? The first two people he meets back on the X-Files, oh, everything you've got is all fake. Really?
Oh my god, you're so right. Let's go.
It's a revelation! Oh my god! So Scully, everything we've been is wrong! Everything we've done, it's bullcrap!
And it's funny because while you're watching this episode, you can see Scully and she's like, oh man, not this again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, alright, just get over it already.
And then he meets this old man that's, I guess, is our new Deep Throat, right? And this old dude apparently was at the Roswell crash. He saw the aliens. And he's apparently been feeding Mulder information over the last 10 years. But when Mulder meets him, he doesn't tell Mulder crap! Mulder's, like, going off on a tangent, and all the old man does is, yeah, you're close. You gotta dig a little more.
Bye now.
See ya. And it's like, okay, what was your purpose? Because apparently you don't know what the frack you're talking about. And in the process, he makes fun of the face-altering aliens that were burning alien abductees.
Yeah.
He said, there was no war between the aliens. Yes, there was. We know they're aliens. They bleed freaking toxic blood. They're not human.
Here's the thing. We have a lot of problems with this episode, but even with the problems, we still loved it because X-Files is back.
Right. But that's not the last thing. There's one more thing that we should talk about. And I'm even okay with the ARV crafts, you know, the alien replica vehicles. I'm okay with that. But the cigarette smoking man is back. And while it was completely awesome to see him there smoking his cigarette through his,
trach.
At the same time, I'm thinking to myself, this dude is dead. There's no freaking way he could have survived. And I'm thinking to myself, well, how could he have survived? Maybe he's a clone. Maybe he's this. Maybe he's that.
But his face is all screwed
up. But his face is practically burnt off, and he's got all these fake bits and pieces all over his face.
You know what he reminded me of? Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a feeling the only reason they brought him back is because he was such a beloved and popular character from the original series. And they figured, okay, well, we'll bring him back.
Yep.
What are you going to bring back next? The Lone Gunman?
Maybe. Who knows? Did we see them die? No. We saw them trapped and looking like they were dying. But do we know they died? Even though they were ghosts when Mulder was having his visions and at the end of Series 9.
Yeah, but that was drug-induced.
Yeah, possibly.
They might not have been ghosts, he might just been hallucinating.
Alright, so Episode 1 of the new series was a bit of a false start. It was fun seeing everybody back. It was fun seeing Mulder and Scully.
I hated their voices.
Their voices sound like they've been heavy chain-smoking. I don't know what's up with that. Well, we know what's up with that. They're David Duchovny's 55 years old, and you know, I'm sure Gillian Anderson's not that much younger. They're older, so we just kind of accept that they're older. Then the second episode happened, and I started to feel like the X-Files reboot had a chance. Because The Founder's Mutation was actually a really great episode.
Yes, it was. It was a lot more entertaining than the first episode. We're also seeing the X-Files back in the FBI building again.
Mm-hmm.
They're a team again. They are working for the FBI again.
Yep.
And we haven't seen that in so long. It's wonderful.
Yep. And it really reminded me of old-style X-Files, where, you know, they're just working the case and getting to the bottom of it and figuring out all the different ins and outs of it. And, yeah, they tried to throw a little, conspiracy theory into it, you know, but for the most part, I think it was well done.
It goes back to the whole Monster of the Week episodes that we grew up with and we loved very much. And this, I think, had a tinge of the conspiracy still there.
Mm-hmm. But it was more Monster of the Week.
It was more Monster of the Week, which is why we loved it. And it was Mulder and Scully, you know, getting back to their roots in regards to the X-Files.
Yes.
And that's why this was so much more entertaining. I figured I was only going to like the Myth Arc episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And not get into the Monster of the Week episodes as much, but it was better. It was better than the first episode.
It was much better. And what was interesting is apparently Chris Carter, the creator of the X-Files, actually changed the order that the episodes are being deployed. And this was not a Fox-mandated thing. This isn't a Firefly situation where, you know, Fox is demanding that they air this episode or that episode or whatever. No, this is something that Chris Carter decided to do because he felt like it would play better story-wise. So, this episode was actually expected to be episode number 5, the one right before the miniseries finale. But he moved it to 2 because he felt it would be a good follow-up to episode 1.
And he
was right. Now, episode 3 and episode 4, and episode 5 for that matter, are all going to be Monsters of the Weeks.
Obviously, because they're going to end the miniseries with a Myth Arc episode.
With the Myth Arc episode, yeah. And what's funny is the next episode is actually called Mulder and Scully Meet the Weremonster. So I have a feeling that's going to be a fun episode. Yeah, because every once in a while, X-Files will throw that little comedic episode for you. So I have a feeling that's where we're going with that.
Well, this episode wasn't part of the Myth Arc, but it's one of the episodes I remember the most. Do you remember that one Christmas episode where Mulder and Scully head to a haunted house?
Mm-hmm.
And they're being plagued by these two ghosts that are playing games with them.
Mm-hmm.
That it's creepy because it's ghosts, but at the same time, it was funny.
Yeah.
And it was also a Christmas episode to boot.
Yep. And I think that's kind of probably going to be the same theory about that. It's just going to be something funny. Kind of like that Supernatural episode where they had like all the movie monster villain kind of things.
Or the one where Dean became fearful and paranoid and screaming at little Yorkies and kitty cats.
Exactly.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, so it looks like it's going to be a fun episode. I do want to talk a little bit about Mulder and Scully's relationship. Because at the end of I Want to Believe, Mulder and Scully were still together, romantically, in the biblical sense. And by the start of the miniseries, they are separated. And in fact, there's one moment in the series opener where you're thinking that Scully may actually start to hook up with that Fox News guy.
Yeah, we were like, no, no, not him.
And I was like, Tad, you keep your hands to yourself. But luckily that didn't happen, and I think as the episode went on, and especially in this episode, which was very... another thing I really liked about episode 2 was how they really talked about the William angle. You know, the boy that they lost that was
given up for adoption. And the little dreams and visions that they were having of what would it have been like if William was still with them.
Mm-hmm. And man, there was some tear-jerking stuff going on there, man.
Yes. But also some fearful stuff, because mm-hmm. obviously they have fears that in regards to William, but mm-hmm. they don't have any control over that anymore anyway. They'll never see William again.
I mean, I just love Mulder with William with that whole rocketeering scene.
Oh, yeah, building the rocket.
Building the rockets and launching the rockets and him quoting John F. Kennedy. I mean, it was awesome. That would have been great if that was real life.
Mulder would have been a great dad.
Yeah.
And he never even got to meet his son.
Yep.
He was gone.
So, that aspect of their relationship, I think, was done very well as well. I think they're building something very good with their relationship.
Okay, for the sake of not sounding stupid, he did meet his son.
Did he?
Yeah. He met William right after he was born.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to get that out there so I don't get anybody saying, that's not how it happened, you're stupid.
Yeah, because that was the scene, you know, William was there when the kiss happened.
Exactly.
The kiss heard around the world. Yep, so I'm very happy with the way that you're treating the Mulder-Scully relationship. I hate the idea that they split up, but I kind of understand that Scully kind of couldn't put up with Mulder's insane paranoia for too long.
Who would?
Yeah.
I mean, he's mental.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
But now that they're back together, you can see the energy between them. Jillian and David, it's almost like they've picked up right where they left off, you know. They just are so good together. I mean, I know I've heard rumors that they hated each other at some point during the series, and I guess that happens, you know. You start to hate your co-star or whatever, especially with the whole thing where he was making twice of what she was making. You know, that kind of thing. But on screen, and I don't know if they ever made up or what. I'm assuming they did. I wouldn't expect them to come to work together if they completely hated each other still. But in fact, I still see them tweeting each other, too. Get that, Mulder used social media. But anyway, on screen, though, their chemistry is just outstanding. And it really makes the X-Files, and that's really why X-Files collapsed in the early 2000s, was because David Duchovny was leaving the series, and Gillian Anderson was being put to the background while they tried to introduce these two new FBI characters to take over the X-Files.
And it didn't work.
And it was totally not working. Totally not working. And basically, that's what killed the show. And now that the two main principals are back, the core of the show is back, I think the X-Files can survive. In fact, the ratings have come in for the first two episodes, and they've been great. So,
And this is what I'm loving the most about the X-Files. The X-Files series has been gone for a really, really, really long time. Even longer than Firefly, mm-hmm. for example.
Sure, yeah.
So if X-Files can come back and have the ratings that it has right now, then that tells me that even Firefly has a chance to come back. Torchwood has a chance to come back.
I don't know about Torchwood.
Well, Firefly, definitely. And you can even get the original cast to come back together for you.
Well, they've all said that they would do it. So, let's go ahead and rate these first two X-Files episodes. For number one, I'll give it a 6.
Yeah, me too.
And that's being kind?
Yes. I was going to give it a 5.
That's just... The 6 is really just because X-Files is back, yay. Pretty much. 2? I'll go with an 8.
Yeah, well, I'll go with a 7.5.
Okay.
One of the things I've noticed with these first couple episodes that I know you also noticed, there has been a lot of exposition.
Yeah.
A little too much exposition.
Yeah. Yeah, there has been a lot of Mulder just sitting there rattling off a whole bunch of facts for about 5 minutes, and that is not good. They need to do better than that.
I want to see a little bit less exposition and a little bit more content, action,
mm-hmm.
That type of stuff. Because the constant exposition gets a little boring.
And, I mean, they had some of that in the original series, but it wasn't to that extent.
Yes, yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. All right, so that does it for our X-Files return review. And coming up next, we're going to have a Dr. Geeks moment in science. And then after that, we're going to talk some big Doctor Who news.
Wee-oo. Ooh. I'm done.
Are you sure? Hey, Rita.
What up?
Where in the world can we get Manos the Hands of Fate?
Well, it's a good thing you asked. You can go to our Transmissions from Atlantis store at the ESO Network store.
We have an ESO Network store?
Yes, we do.
How about that?
Awesome!
What else can you get in there?
Everything. We've got Doctor Who. We've got Wool by Hugh Howey. We've got books by you.
Hey, now that's class.
And not to mention, you can even pick up the Walking Dead omnibus volumes.
And how do people get this?
Well, all you gotta do is go to astore.amazon.com, Earth Station 1.
Alrighty then, I'm on my way.
Dr. Geek's Moment of Science. Here is the lab director and your human host, Dr. Geek.
Claire! Getting all ready for our trip to the convention?
Geek, I found a snag in your otherwise fine plan.
Just one?
I just saw footage from last year's event. Those sky bridges can get jam-packed. What use is freezing time between panels if you can't get through those human habit trails?
Well, you could always walk outside.
And bake in the sun of Hotlanta? No, thank you.
So?
So I was thinking.
Here it comes.
If I were the size of an ant, then I could really do something.
Excuse me?
I thought of asking you to shrink everyone else, but I could just hear you saying, "Now, Claire, it's not nice to walk all over people." Besides, that Ant-Man movie looks like fun. If I were the size of an ant, I could zip through that mass of humanity and be at the panels before you could say, "Honey, I blew up my boss."
Nice reference.
I thought you'd like that.
But you can't really shrink a person without also miniaturizing their atoms, and...
Isaac Asimov said it was impossible according to the rules of quantum mechanics.
Well, yes.
I do my research.
You do?
Well, I know it was impossible for him. I am sorry. I guess I sometimes ask too much of you.
Challenge accepted. You know what I always say? Nothing's impossible, just highly improbable. Let me make some adjustments to my sonic servo here. And... presto!
I knew you could do it. Now blow me up. I wish I were big. You know what I mean.
Coming right up. That's not a good sound.
Geek, fix this quick before one of your maintenance robots comes and sweeps me away.
No problem. I'll have you restored in no time. I hope. In the meantime, everyone should remember to apply their geekdom!
This moment of science was brought to you by Dr. Geek's Laboratory of Applied Geekdom, a Brazen Wench production, copyright 2015, in association with this network. Join the adventure. Download the full Labcast at www.drgeeklab.com and follow us at facebook.com/drgeeklab and twitter.com/drgeeklab.
This is Gareth David Lloyd. I play Yanto in Torchwood, and you're listening to Transmissions from Atlantis.
I tried to talk. I want you to remember that. I tried to reach out. I tried to understand you, but I think that you understand us perfectly.
I think that you just don't care. And I don't know whether you are here to invade, infiltrate, or just replace us. I don't suppose it really matters now. You are monsters!
That is the role you seem determined to play, so it seems that I must play mine.
The man that stops the monsters.
I'm sending you back to your own dimension. Who knows? Some of you may even survive the trip. And if you do, remember this. You are not welcome here. This plane is protected. I am the Doctor.
All right, folks. You know that music, and we're going to be talking Doctor Who. And we promised you a review of Series 9, and we'll get to that. But first, the huge monumental news that Stephen Moffat will be leaving the showrunner chair in 2017 after Series 10. And the new showrunner is going to be Chris Chibnall of Broadchurch fame. And he's also written a few of the more interesting, I guess I could call, Doctor Who episodes.
He's written some good Doctor Who episodes, man.
Some of them okay, and some of them not so great.
Hey, I liked The Hungry Earth.
But I didn't. I thought it sucked. But but hey, you know what? Chris Chibnall has done an amazing job with Broadchurch, and it's very exciting that he's going to bring that particular talent to Doctor Who. It's a new voice, it's a new direction, and a lot's going to change over the next year.
Hallelujah! Sorry.
Here's the thing that really struck me about the Moffat news. I could give freck less if Moffat's going to be there or not. Really, I can. What really bugged me about the news was the fact that we are having no new Who this year.
Yeah. What is up with that?
There will be no Doctor Who.
Nothing!
In 2016, except for the Christmas episode, Christmas Day 2016. Which means I have a whole year before I get to see what happens next with Peter Capaldi.
Well, if you
Before we get introduced to our new companion.
Well, if you think about it, they did this to us during the 50th anniversary year. Because there was so much focus on the anniversary that we went almost a year without any new Who.
Yeah.
Between Series 6 and 7 was a very, very long period of time.
It was a long time. Yeah, it was a long time. And some of the, I guess, reasoning behind this, according to the BBC Supercontroller, whatever the hell that is apparently 2016 is going to be a big event year with, I guess, the Olympics and a whole bunch of other crap going on in Britain in 2016. And they did not want Doctor Who to be overshadowed in 2016, so they decided to shelve Doctor Who until 2017 and have this big start, apparently March of 2017.
Which is where originally the series always started anyway.
Yeah, and I kind of like that they're going back to March, because the late seasons, late in the year start, just did not seem to work very well.
Yeah.
And the ratings turned to crap because of it.
No, you got too many shows starting in the fall.
Yeah. So, I'm going to say that I thought Moffat's run had its moments. And it had a lot of low moments. And I pretty much blame Moffat for the ratings going way down. Because I feel that the writing for Peter Capaldi has not been good. Especially in Series 8. It got better in Series 9. But it still wasn't to the par of what he was writing for Matt.
I agree with you there. Ever since he took over as showrunner, it just hasn't been the same. During Chris Eccleston's run and David Tennant's run, you had these wonderful stories. And the stuff that Stephen Moffat wrote at the time was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Blank, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of stuff, but then after he became the showrunner, he was so focused on the overall story arcs that the individual Monster of the Week type stories started to lose a little bit of something.
And I think another thing that happened to Doctor Who is because it gotten so big with David and then with Matt, it really blew up. And I think because of that, in a way, I think it got too big for itself.
I agree.
Where instead of relying on good storytelling, it began to rely on special effects and the new cool monsters. And like you said, the story arc where Moffat had to show us how clever he was. You know, with all these little clues and this and that. And changing Doctor Who history. You know, I will never question Day of the Doctor. It's probably one of the best Doctor Who episodes ever. But at the same time, you're changing history.
Yes. See, when T. Davies was the showrunner...
Russell T. Davies.
When Russell T. Davies was the showrunner,
yep.
He also had those overall story arcs. But the little clues he plugged in here and there were very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Like those episodes during the Donna series when Rose would show up every once in a mm-hmm. while. And it all culminated towards at the end.
Right.
That was done properly. But with Moffat's run, it's like all of these episodes... If there were myth arc episodes in Doctor Who, every single episode would have been a myth arc episode. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much. And in a way, a lot of them were that way. And it grew very frustrating to kind of have to weed through all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when they were doing the season splits.
Oh, my. The season splits were so annoying.
But, you know, at the same time, he did give us Day of the Doctor, which was a fabulous episode. The preceding episodes of that were fantastic. Name of the Doctor and Night of the Doctor with Paul McGann. I just hated that he tried to monkey with Doctor Who mythology. You know, Russell T. set it up to where Gallifrey was gone. And then Moffat came in and wanted to change it all. Bring Gallifrey back. Bring Davros back. Davros was supposedly died, you know, in David Tennant's run. And instead, Davros is back. The Daleks, when he tried to change the Daleks' colors to the Power Ranger Daleks. You know,
Everybody hated those.
He just kept trying to frack with stuff, and it wasn't right. It just wasn't right.
And it wasn't quite working.
Yeah. And it was always one of those things where it seemed like what he was trying to do had potential, but then he'd go off on such a crazy tangent that made absolutely no freaking sense that it ruined it.
Well, it's like you said, he was trying to be clever, but what he ended up doing was just creating confusion.
Yeah. So, am I sad to see Moffat go?
No.
No? I'm ready for a new voice. I really am.
In all honesty, though, I hope that every once in a while he'll still come back and write for Doctor Who.
Yeah, I can definitely take that. And another thing is I hated having Doctor Who be relying on Sherlock. You know, because if Moffat decided that was the year he was going to write Sherlock, Doctor Who took a hit for it. And I think that's part of the reason why we're having the hiatus this year.
Is because of Sherlock.
Is because of Sherlock. And don't get me wrong, I love Sherlock. But I want Moffat to go concentrate on Sherlock and let somebody else take Doctor Who and turn Doctor Who back to what it used to be. Fun.
If you think about it, it's like Moffat just doesn't know how to multitask.
Yep. And another sad thing, I think, is that it sounds like Peter Capaldi may be having his last season as Doctor as well, which is a shame because I've loved Peter's run. I think Peter's a great Doctor. I think he's suffered from really poor writing, but he's done the best he could with it, and I think he's a fabulous Doctor. I love him as the Doctor.
I also think he's brilliant, and if Matt's Doctor seemed like he had been around for a long time because of that really long hiatus that we had,
mm-hmm.
but if you think about it, he hasn't really been here all that long either.
Yeah.
When you look at the series as a whole.
Yep.
So I really do hope Peter Capaldi will stay for after Series 10.
It doesn't look like that's going to happen, though. And, you know, in the end, it's kind of the way it is with the Doctors. They go about 3 years or 3 seasons, and then it's time to move on. It's unusual for Matt to stay as long as he did. And really, the only reason it was that long was because of the long breaks during his run. I'm sad, but I understand it. Chris Chibnall should have hit the right to pick his own Doctor. He shouldn't be saddled with the last guy's Doctor. If you think about it, when Russell T. handed over the keys to Stephen Moffat, it was the same deal. So, you know, Moffat got to pick his Doctor and his companion and go from there. Which leads me to believe that whoever we get for the companion for this upcoming season is going to be a one-season companion. Like
Donna was.
Like Donna or Martha.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you.
So I wouldn't get too invested in this new companion. Because I think that's all going to change. All right, so looking forward to seeing what happens. Disappointed that we won't have Doctor Who till 2017. But it is what it is. What are we going to do?
Yep. And by the way, have you noticed that most of the Christmas episodes under Moffat are the ones you don't like?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, that's not true.
Christmas Carol you like, but then all the ones after that have usually been kind of... except for the Capaldi ones.
Have been good. Yeah, the Capaldi ones have been great. The Matt ones have been kind of weak. I think the only Matt one I liked was the Christmas Carol one. I'll agree with you there. Let's go ahead and talk about Series 9. Obviously, we're a little late in reviewing this, but... You know, we've had a lot to talk about the last Star Wars and everything coming out. We've had a lot to talk about. So, the season started off with The Magician's Apprentice and The Witch's Familiar. And that was the return of Davros. And what did you think of that?
It was a good start to the season. But, again, starting off the series... with Missy and Daleks after we just left off with Cybermen and Missy, I would have liked to have seen something different.
I couldn't disagree more. I thought those episodes were maybe the best that Stephen Moffat's written since The Day of the Doctor. And I found both of those episodes compelling. The whole storyline with Davros was fascinating. And... I thought they were very, very strong episodes. And it also brought the return of the two-parter.
And, oh, wow. This season was filled with two-parters.
And it was the season of the two-parter. And I have to say that I kind of like having the two-parters again. It brought back the drama in Doctor Who.
I don't mind two-parters. I just think there were too many of them.
Yeah, it's kind of like you don't want to overuse them. And when, like... every other episode's a two-parter episode, it can start to weigh on you a little bit. The second two-parter was Under the Lake and Before the Flood, which I thought were super creepy episodes.
These were creepy episodes. I had fun watching these. These were really, really cool. And it took you to a place where at least a new series hadn't seen before. Underwater mm-hmm. kind of base and...
Yep.
ghosts, and it was really cool.
And it was kind of creepy seeing Capaldi as a ghost, so it was...
That was the, okay, he must be dead.
Yeah, which of course we knew he wasn't dead, but it was kind of weird. I enjoyed both episodes. I thought they were very strong. It led me to be really excited about seeing Maisie Williams in The Girl Who Died. And I have to say, The Girl Who Died and The Woman Who Lived, the two-parter, there were some great moments in those two episodes, but I was a little bit disappointed that they weren't better than what they were, especially considering that they got Maisie Williams in as a main character.
I do agree with you with that one. The story could have been better. It was amazing. I mean, the whole series as a whole... The whole series as a whole. Series 9 as a whole had so much better writing than 8, but there's mm-hmm. there are still some weak spots.
Yeah.
And that... The story could have been better.
I wouldn't call this one a weak spot. I would just say it wasn't as good as the first 4 episodes before it. That's what I would say.
Okay.
Would you agree with that or you disagree?
I mean...
You thought it was weak?
A little bit. It's still a great story, but in comparison to the rest of the season, it's not the one I'm jumping to watch the most.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then we come to the Zygon Invasion and the Zygon Inversion. Now, these two episodes were probably a pair of episodes that were right up there with The Magician's Apprentice and The Witch's Familiar as a couple of the best episodes of the season.
I think they were probably my favorites of the season.
Yeah. They might be, yeah.
Number one, because we saw the return of Oswin.
Yep.
Who I think all the fans love because she impersonates the fans.
Mm-hmm.
That's who she is. She is the fans. And
She is an amalgamation of the fans.
And we finally got to see Peter Capaldi give a tremendous speech.
Oh, man.
That speech.
Well, we cannot go through this review without playing that speech. So let's go ahead and play the speech.
Doctor, which of these buttons do I press? Doctor, which one? Truth or consequences?
Truth or consequences?
This is the moment we've all been waiting for.
Make your mind up, time! One of those buttons will destroy the Zygons, release the imbeciles' gas. The other one detonates the nuclear warhead under the Black Archive. It'll destroy everyone in London. Bonnie, sweetheart, one of those buttons will unmask every Zygon in the world. The other one cancels their ability to change form. It'll make them human beings forever. There are safeguards beyond safeguards. I did this on a very important day for me. And this ceasefire will stand.
This is wrong.
No, it's not.
You are responsible for all of the violence, all of the suffering.
No, I'm not.
Yes.
No.
Yes, you engineered this situation, Doctor. This is your fault.
So it's not your fault.
I had to do what I've done.
So did I.
We've been treated like cattle.
So what?
We've been left to fend for ourselves.
So is everyone.
It's not fair.
Oh, it's not fair. Oh, I didn't realize that. It was not fair. But you know what? My TARDIS doesn't work properly, and I don't have my own personal tailor.
The things don't equate.
These things have happened, Zygela. They are facts. You just want cruelty to beget cruelty. You're not superior to people who were cruel to you. You're just a whole bunch of new cruel people. A whole bunch of new cruel people being cruel to some other people who'll end up being cruel to you. The only way anyone can live in peace is if they're prepared to forgive. Why don't you break the cycle?
Why should we?
What is it that you actually want?
War.
Right. And when this war is over, when you have a homeland free from humans, what do you think it's going to be like? Do you know? Have you thought about it? Have you given it any consideration? Because you're very close to getting what you want. What's it going to be like? Paint me a picture. Are you going to live in houses? Do you want people to go to work? Will there be holidays? Oh, will there be music? Do you think people will be allowed to play violins? Who's going to make the violins? Well, oh, you don't actually know, do you? Because, like every other tantruming child in history, Bonnie, you don't actually know what you want. So let me ask you a question about this brave new world of yours. When you've killed all the bad guys, and when it's all perfect and just and fair, when you have finally got it exactly the way you want it, what are you going to do with the people like you? The troublemakers. How are you going to protect your glorious revolution from the next one?
We'll win.
Oh, will you? Well, maybe. Maybe you will win. But nobody wins for long. The wheel just keeps turning. So come on. Break the cycle.
Why are you still talking?
Because I want to get you to see, and I'm almost there.
Do you know what I see, Doctor? A box. A box with everything I need. A 50% chance.
For us too.
And we're off! Fingers on buzzers! Are you feeling lucky? Are you ready to play the game? Who's going to be quickest? Who's going to be luckiest?
This is not a game!
No, it's not a game, sweetheart, and I mean that most sincerely.
Why are you doing this?
Yes, I'd quite like to know that too. You set this up. Why?
Because it's not a game, Kate. This is a scale model of war. Every war ever fought right there in front of you. Because it's always the same. When you fire that first shot, no matter how right you feel, you have no idea who's going to die.
You don't know whose children are going to scream and burn. How many hearts will be broken? How many lives shattered? How much blood will spill until everybody does what they were always going to have to do from the very beginning? Sit down and talk! Listen to me, listen. I just want you to think. Do you know what thinking is? It's just a fancy word for changing your mind.
I will not change my mind.
Then you will die stupid. Alternatively, you could step away from that box. You could walk right out of that door and you could stand your revolution down.
No. I'm not stopping this, Doctor. I started it. I will not stop it. You think they'll let me go after what I've done?
You're all the same, you screaming kids. You know that? Look at me. I'm unforgivable. Well, here's the unforeseeable. I forgive you. After all you've done, I forgive you.
You don't understand. You will never understand.
I don't understand. Are you kidding? Me? Of course I understand. I mean, do you call this a war, this funny little thing? This is not a war. I fought in a bigger war than you will ever know. I did worse things than you could ever imagine. And when I close my eyes, I hear more screams than anyone could ever be able to count. And you know what you do with all that pain? Shall I tell you where you put it? You hold it tight. Burns your hand, and you say this: no one else will ever have to live like this. No one else will ever have to feel this pain. Not on my watch.
Empty, isn't it? Both boxes. There's nothing in them. Just buttons.
Of course. Do you know how you know that? Because you've started to think like me. It's hell, isn't it? No one should have to think like that. And no one will. Not on our watch. Gotcha.
How can you be so sure?
Because you're of a disadvantage, Sajila.
This is all very well, but we know the boxes are empty now. We can't forget that.
No, well, you said that the last 15 times.
It's just perfect. Every part of that speech is the passion that Capaldi brings to that speech.
Every doctor usually has at least one or two of these really amazing mm-hmm. speeches.
Matt had a few of them.
Yes, Matt had a few of them. What I loved about this one is that this one made an impact mm-hmm. to the people he was talking to.
And the villain. The villain decided not to be a villain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because, for example, if you think about Matt, the Pandorica opens. When he's doing his Stonehenge speech, That entire speech.
It's pointless.
It's pointless. Yeah. Completely and utterly pointless. Because he's telling them, come and get me, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, don't worry, we will.
Yep. And if you think about it, his fantastic speech in front of the sun creature thing and when with the
bell. Was up, also pointless.
It was also pointless.
Because Clara was the one.
With her stupid leaf. With her stupid leaf. Yes.
So he got some great speeches, but they were pointless.
Yes.
This was not pointless, though. This speech that Capaldi made was very riveting. And
it made all the difference.
And I think it's because people today can actually relate mm-hmm. to what he's talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. After those two great episodes, we had the low point of Series 9, and that was Sleep No More.
Oh, that episode was horrible.
Where the concept of this episode was, eye boogers are coming to get you.
Yeah. And you get to the final little secret at the end, and we're like, okay, so the secret at the end is more eye boogers.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, so you have a patient zero eye booger.
Yes. And
that's your big reveal.
And what's even worse is it was a found footage episode.
Which made it even worse.
Which made it even worse. So not only was it a horrible concept, it was also a found footage filmed episode. Which,
the writing was bad. The monsters were bad. The found footage idea was bad.
Well, and that's just our personal preference. We absolutely hate found footage crap. It's awful.
Well, because more often than not, it's just not done properly.
Right.
Because, for example, one of season 4's Supernatural found footage episodes was actually really cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's still found footage, but it was really interesting. And it was creepy.
Yeah.
But Sleep No More sucked.
Yeah, it was awful. And I don't know what it is about Mark Gatiss's last few episodes that he's written, but he's... You know, Gatiss is one of the biggest Doctor Who fans out there. He loves Doctor Who. And he knows Doctor Who left and right.
And he's written some amazing episodes.
He has. But his last few episodes have all sucked. They're awful. I mean, they are awful.
Sorry, Mycroft, don't come and kill me.
Yes, I mean, I'm sorry, Mark. I mean, I love you to death. You're a great writer, and you're
a great actor.
And you're a great actor, and you're a brilliant Doctor Who historian. And I love some of your Big Finish stuff. Some of your Big Finish stuff is some of the best Big Finish stuff out there. But your last few episodes have sucked. I'm sorry. They're terrible. All right. Then we have Face the Raven, which is the start of a three-parter, really, if you really think about it.
Yeah.
And Face the Raven was a below-average episode, and even worse, it had the most pointless death of a companion that I think we've ever seen in Doctor Who.
Agreed.
Right up there with Sarah Kingdom. I mean, at least when Adric died, as much as everybody hated Adric, at least he did it, you know, trying to save the world. But this one, it was because...
Clara essentially died because
she's stupid.
Decided to take something onto herself without telling anybody and...
Because she's a flipping moron. And without That's why thinking. She died. And, I don't know, it really, her death... And believe me, I am no Clara fan. All of our listeners know how much I've disliked Clara as a character since maybe, I don't know, ever since we've gotten millennial Clara instead of having...
Yeah, we should have had Nanny Clara.
Instead of Nanny Clara, right. And even with that dislike of the character... I felt she deserved better than that. She's the impossible girl. She shouldn't die like that.
Agreed. And here's another thing I just didn't like about that episode in general. You had Diagon Alley in Doctor Who.
Exactly.
The whole secret London thing was so pointless. What was the point of secret London?
And you're right, it's Diagon Alley. It's like, you couldn't come up with anything better than Diagon Alley, really. And
it made no sense.
And what was the thing that killed Clara? because I don't think it had anything to do with Heaven Sent or Hell Bent, to be quite honest with
you. No, it didn't. They just wanted something to kill her, but yeah. They couldn't figure out what it was. Okay, we'll make this raven that takes people's souls right. Or something. It was pointless.
Yep, it totally was. And it was a very disappointing episode, and it just basically sucked, I thought.
Yep. All right, so the next episode after that was the episode...
Heaven Sent.
That I thought was probably the most brilliant episode of the entire series.
Totally agree.
Period.
Totally agree. Peter Capaldi, by himself, through the entire episode, you would think that would make for a bad episode.
Nope.
He was brilliant!
It was so amazing. And, so amazing.
And it's really hard to articulate why it was just the way he put the passion into the character and the things that he went through. And then I thought Moffat's writing in this particular episode was really, really good, because I didn't see the trick coming.
No, not until the end when you know there's all these skulls in the water, but you don't know where they've come from.
And to know that they went to the extreme of plastering Capaldi's face so that it's a skull replica of Capaldi, because all those skulls represent how many times he had gone through the time loop and had it happen over and over and over again.
I mean, and how long was he in that thing? I think it was like 5 billion years.
Yeah, it was like billions of years, because each time he'd go and smack into the diamond thing, and then, you know, back he came again and did it all over again. And I love the little trick at the end as well, where he thought that home meant the TARDIS, but in reality it was Gallifrey.
And that's when your mind is blown. You're like, holy crap, he's on Gallifrey!
Yep. Oh. And then we end up with Hellbent. And let me just say about Hellbent, it started out fantastic. I was ooing and aahing at every single thing I was seeing. And then Clara came back. And it was kind of like, well, Clara's back. Great. That's just great. And it ruined the episode, because there was no point in bringing her back. Let him figure it out. Let him do what he had to do.
See, this is where our opinions differ on this episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do have my own problems with Hellbent. Like, for example, the one lady from Karn, I saw absolutely no point to her presence being there.
Yeah, why did she just show up there in Gallifrey? For what? What was she there for?
I know, and you have no idea, you know, what side she's on. There's no clue why she's even there. I had no problem with Clara coming back. And I don't think she's ever going to come back in the series. I think this was a better way of sending her off instead of just flat out killing her with the stupid raven thing.
Yeah, I completely disagree.
Whatever.
Because they sent her off in another TARDIS that is now stuck as a f***ing diner! As a diner! It's a friggin' diner!
Oh, they'll fix it. They'll figure it out.
It's what, I mean...
Well, I think one of the scenes I actually enjoyed in that episode is when, you know, they talk about how, you know, it, you know, what will be there at the end of time and the end of the universe, and it'll be me. And it was me.
But Miss Me, or Madam Me, or whatever the hell she was calling herself.
Yeah, exactly. I love that she was still there.
Yep.
After billions and billions and billions of years.
Yep.
And it's like, if anybody was the girl who waited, it was me.
Yeah, pretty much.
She deserved to be in that TARDIS.
Yeah, and I do kind of like the idea that Big Finish has a whole bunch of material to work with Maisie Williams and Jenna Coleman, when Jenna's done playing the Queen of England or whatever. And they're going to have a whole line of great audios to kind of play with that. But that wasn't the way to end the season. It really wasn't.
See, you have a problem with it. I don't.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved the first half of the episode, but the second half of the episode just kind of sucked for me. And
I mean, I do agree that the second half of the episode wasn't as strong as the first half of the episode, but I don't think it was so awful that I'm going to hate it.
Yeah. And I'm going to go ahead and include the Christmas episode in with this season, The Husbands of River Song. And we just recently reviewed it, so we don't really have to go through the details on it again. But
other than the fact that it was awesome!
That, I think, was a great ending. I mean, if Moffat decided to walk away right there, that would have been a great ending for him. You know, obviously he's going to stick around for Series 10, but the way that he tied back
to Silence in the Library,
with the screwdriver, with the singing towers, showing us that last day.
I mean, I've already seen fans either splice together memes or videos to put those two episodes together, mm-hmm. and it's perfect. And it's perfect, and it's like, oh my, it brings me to tears, actually.
And you forget that Moffat was the one that wrote Silence in the Library. So he knew every detail of what he wrote back then and was able to match it up perfectly.
And now you get to match up, you know, River's monologue in that episode to this episode, it's so brilliant.
Yeah, it is.
It's amazing.
It's very well done, very impressive, and it was very enjoyable, and I've got a huge crush on Alex Kingston. I first saw her.
Excuse me?
Well, I do. I'm sorry.
Hello, sweetie.
You're my wife, I love you, but Alex Kingston's hot. She is. And she's very nice.
Listeners, that next noise you're going to hear is me beating up on my husband. Weren't you saying I'm not hot?
No, you're very hot, but she's also hot. Hey, there are other women in the world that are hot. You're the supremely hot one. That's why I married you. But Alex Kingston is super hot for me. She just does it for me. I don't know why.
Hello, sweetie.
What? Like, you don't have guys that do it for you on television. Right?
Yeah, but I don't sit around here talking to you about it.
If I can't talk to you about it, who am I going to talk to about it?
Other guys, maybe. You don't tell me.
I didn't know you were that jealous. I must be hot stuff if you're that jealous.
Oh my lord, get on with this before I bitch slap you.
So overall for series 9, how would you rate the entire series
as a whole, from 1
as
to 10
from 1 to 10? Yep.
I'll give it a 9, and the only reason I don't give it a 10 is because of Sleep No More.
I'll give it an 8 because I felt that there were some down points with Sleep No More, with Face the Raven. Hellbent was a little disappointing for me. The Girl Who Died and The Girl Who Lived wasn't as good as I hoped it would be. But it was a very, very strong season of Doctor Who.
Much better than the previous season.
It was night and day from Series 8. Series 8 is one of those where you just want to kind of put it away and you know, watch it when you're just doing your marathon and then never watch it again kind of thing. Because
and even then, if we're binge watching it, some episodes may be skipped.
More than some. Yeah. Like the Arbor Day episode, like Kill the Moon.
I like the Arbor Day episode. Kill
the trees save us from a frickin' solar flare. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding? Don't get me started. All right. You're pressing my buttons now just because of the Alex Kingston thing.
Yep.
All right.
Fine, you want to know who does it for me?
Who?
Jensen Ackles.
Really?
Dean.
Winchester. Dean Winchester.
He's hot.
My name is Dean Winchester. I'm an Aquarius. I enjoy sunsets, long walks on the beach, and frisky women.
Son of a bitch! No.
Where's my pie?
Where's my pie? All right. Alright folks, that's going to do it for this particular episode of Transmissions from Atlantis. Coming up next time, we're going to talk about Supernatural, because Supernatural has been going through the rest of its season 11, and we've also been rewatching all of the old Supernaturals. We're going to walk down memory lane with the Winchester boys, and apparently Rita's heartthrob, Jensen Ackles.
Come here. I'm going to lay my head gently on your shoulder. Maybe we can cry, hug, maybe even slow dance.
And we're going to just kind of harken back to when Supernatural was great.
And when demons were still scary.
When demons were still scary, when we had Monsters of the Week, and we didn't have angels screwing everything up every 5 minutes. We'll also be talking about the return of the Walking Dead and the arrival of a certain bat-wielding bad boy that may take out one of our heroes by the next time we have an episode.
Ah, yes. And as always, we will talk Doctor Who. I don't know if there's going to be any new news, but who knows? We'll probably have a lot of news, you know, throughout the year.
Yep. And if we don't have any new news, we'll at least give you the scoop on all the rumors. Maybe we'll review some of the
Big Finish
stuff. You know, we'll figure out something for Doctor Who, because we're always going to have a Doctor Who segment. And, of course, we'll also wrap up The X-Files, because The X-Files series will be over by then. Well, mostly.
No, it should be over by then.
Yeah. So, until next time, we'll just say...
Allons-y.
Allons-y. Goodbye, everybody.
Allons-y. I should say allons-y, Morocco. Allons-y. Look sharp, Rose Tyler. Allons-y. And then, it'd be really brilliant if I met someone called Alonzo, because then I could say allons-y, Alonzo, every time.
You remind me of the babe. What babe? Babe with the power. Power of voodoo.
Voodoo.
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of the babe.
I saw my baby crying for this babe could cry.
What could I do?
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.